It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
I'm Brett Baer.
I'm Maria Bartiromo.
I'm Brian Kilmeade, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Friday, February 4th, 2022. I'm Lisa Brady. The president pledges to do more on crime, but his critics say it's just more words.
Take those actions that would actually secure this country and help to get the issue of crime in the streets back under control.
We speak with Tennessee Republican Senator Marsha Blackburn.
I'm Chris Foster. A fired pro football coach is suing for racial discrimination.
It has all the makings of a very significant case, but it's only the first step.
And I'm Dan Gaynor. I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
A day after New York City laid a second fallen officer to rest, President Biden was at police headquarters.
It's enough. Enough is enough because we know we can do things about this.
He's appealing for teamwork to fight crime, the federal government working more closely with police and communities.
The answer is not to abandon our streets. That's not the answer. The answer is to come together, the police and communities, building trust and making us all safer. The answer is not to defund the police.
He says Congress should pass more funding for tools and training, including community violence intervention programs. U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland traveling with the president.
The Justice Department will use every tool at our disposal to protect our communities. We will hold perpetrators of violent crime and gun violence accountable.
But they did not address concern about bail reform or some local prosecutors around the country accused of being soft on crime. New York Mayor Eric Adams, who met with the president Thursday, is also placing a heavy emphasis on gun violence and the trafficking of illegal guns between states, saying earlier this week when an off-duty officer was shot and injured.
The overproliferation of guns. Ready to use them on individuals in blue uniforms or blue jeans. They don't care.
But he has also condemned the recent release on bond of a repeat offender accused of shooting at a police officer.
One of the things that I really think gets lost on the president and some of those on the left.
Tennessee Republican Senator Marsha Blackburn.
They think that doing something like this, where they are showcasing their concern, is going to replace substantial action, that it will be used to kind of deflect that attention. But I really think they're misreading the American people, especially a lot of security moms who are out there. They're going to look at this and they're going to see the president say, oh, we have to do something about crime on the street. So we have to get something done about guns on the streets. And then they're going to say, well, do it. When people are repeat offenders, lock them up. Keep them in jail. Make certain that you are dealing with these issues. And don't turn around and say, well, we're going to cut bail. We're going to do away with cash bail. We're going to allow people to just go back out on the street. That is what people are tired of. They know that there are criminals, that there are repeat offenders. They're not being locked up. They're being more lenient with criminals. They're being more lenient with those that have a record. And they're beginning to say, oh, no, we want something done. Don't talk to us. Show us.
There seems to be a bit of a tug of war between the argument that bail reform is driving a lot of the crime increase and those who think it's really more about guns. Should there be more of a focus on both?
There should be a focus on bail reform issues. And this no bail, cash bail, removing cash bail, cutting the amount of bail that is necessary. This is frustrating to people. The other thing that is frustrating is securing the southern border. The fact that you have so many gangs that are coming across that southern border. So taking action on those things building that wall on the southern border, prosecuting these criminals that are coming across the border, sending them back to their home countries. Don't give them a plane ticket to Tennessee or New York or Illinois or Kentucky. Put them on a plane and send them home. Don't let them come in the country. Take those actions that would actually secure this country and help to get the issue of crime in the streets back under control. The other thing to look at, these sanctuary cities and the sanctuary city policies that are very lenient. You have these organizations that are affiliated with cartels and gangs that are headquartering there because they know law enforcement is going to be more lenient.
Is border security something that your constituents in Tennessee come to you with as a concern?
I hear it every single weekend when I am home and working and talking with Tennesseans. They see the connection between an open border and the drugs that are in the streets. You know, and we've got great law enforcement officers in Tennessee that are working so hard. And one of my sheriffs last week made a comment. He said, "Marsha, you know, we used to apprehend drugs and we would count it up in grams or ounces." He said, "Today, when we do these apprehensions, they're in pounds." And they know that there's more drugs coming across the border.
Before his crime-fighting trip to New York, the president made a big announcement Thursday morning in the fight against terrorism.
"Operating on my orders, the United States military forces successfully removed a major terrorist threat to the world, the global leader of ISIS."
When special operations forces moved in, the ISIS leader set off explosives, killing himself, his wife, and his children. The raid was in the planning stages for months, and President Biden says it sends a message to terrorists around the world. Could it also send a broader message about U.S. strength at a time when Ukraine is surrounded by Russian troops?
We always need to salute and be grateful for our military intelligence operations, which had located the terrorist, followed the terrorist, how they worked together with our troops to make certain that there was a response, a plan to go in and to take him out. We know that these things do not happen quickly. And we also know that there are months of work that go into finding a way to carry these operations out. And we're truly grateful that some of these special operations forces, with the unique capabilities that they have, are able to work with our military intelligence units and formulate that plan and carry forth a successful operation.
Would you be hoping that it sends a message to, you know, not just terrorists, but perhaps countries that have aggressive things in mind, like Russia?
Of course, this shows that our military intelligence is working and shows their capacity. What would help to send a message to Russia with their aggression, and I would say likewise to Iran and China and North Korea, all of whom have been a bit adventurous when it comes to expanding their reach. What they need to see from the U.S. is sanctions that are properly placed, not only on heads of country, but on financial interest and oligarchs, as in Russia's case. They need to see a diplomatic message that is coordinated. When you have weakness or rudderlessness that is forecast in the statements that we make, it does not do our country and the cause of freedom well.
The Winter Olympics underway now in Beijing. You've written that we're not just enabling, but participating in evil by endorsing the Chinese Communist Party's veneer of diplomacy with these games. Who are you hoping hears that message?
when you look at what the Chinese Communist Party is doing to the Chinese people, it is horrific. And you can go in and look at what is happening in Hong Kong, what has been happening in Tibet, to the Tibetans, to the Mongolians. You look at the genocide that is being carried out against the Uyghurs. And what you know is the Chinese Communist Party and their leadership do not care or hold in high regard the people that make up that country. And then as you look at the way they're bullying Taiwan with their threats, the way they are planning during the Olympics to have a meeting between Xi Jinping and Vladimir Putin and discuss security issues. This is something that should give everyone a reason to be apprehensive about what these countries, I call them the axis of evil, new axis of evil, with Russia and China and Iran and North Korea. I would hope that our allies will look at this and will help us stand against this Russian invasion into Ukraine. I would hope that it would help our allies have strength to push back on China. And I hope that that we have people here who've been soft on China who will look at this and say, now is a time for the U.S. to show our strength and our leadership in preserving the cause of liberty.
The president is working on his first Supreme Court pick, and you'll be part of those eventual confirmation hearings as a member of the Senate Judiciary Committee. There has been some debate about his pledge to choose a black woman. The White House points out President Reagan made the pledge to choose the court's first woman, and he did, Sandra Day O'Connor. Do you have any concerns about the president's pledge or the fact that there's an issue made about any criticism of it?
When I talk to Tennesseans, they want the most well-qualified person for the job to be on a federal district court, a federal circuit court, and the U.S. Supreme Court. That is what they want their emphasis to be. And thereby, they want me to look at the nominees, the individuals that are brought forward, to question whomever is the nominee, be certain that they're a constitutionalist, that they are going to be there to support the Constitution, that they're going to abide by the rule of law. Tennesseans do not want to see activists on the courts. They don't want an activist judiciary that is trying to render rulings and opinions and decisions based on what they would like the law to be. But they want them to give those rulings and opinions and decisions based on the law as written and based on the Constitution as written.
Tennessee Republican Senator Marsha Blackburn, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
The Will Cain Show is now dropping 5 episodes a week. Join Fox and Friends weekend host Will Cain as he tackles the latest headlines from his unique perspective, along with thought-provoking interviews with leading figures and live calls from viewers and listeners. Listen wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
This is Dan Gaynor with your Fox News commentary. Coming up.
Brian Flores was fired last month after 3 seasons as head coach of the Miami Dolphins. He won 24 games and lost 25. Not great, but better than the team had been playing before he got there. Flores is now suing the Dolphins, the NFL, the New York Giants, and Denver Broncos for racial discrimination. He claims he was brought in for sham interviews with the Giants after his firing and the Broncos in 2019 to fulfill the league's diversity requirement for interviews. Flores said on CBS Mornings on Wednesday,
"We didn't have to file a lawsuit for the world to know that there's a problem from a hiring standpoint in regards to minority coaches in the National Football League. The numbers speak for themselves."
The National Football League in a statement says the claims in the suit are without merit.
It has all the makings of a very significant case, but it's only the first step.
Mercedes Colwin's founding partner of the New York offices of the law firm Gordon and Reese and a Fox News legal analyst.
But litigation is a very long process. There are documents that have to be exchanged, witnesses that have to be interviewed. There is going to be lots of just this machinations of what litigation process has, which has many steps. So it's just the very beginning. So it sure, it looks like it's a compelling case, but at the end of the day, it's going to be really analyzed, scrutinized, and there's so many steps involved in that process. It won't be until the very final step to see whether there's any meat on the bones of this case.
Is the goal here to just sort of blow this whole thing wide open and have the case represent other minority coaches or candidates who feel they might have been wrong too?
Without question. And that's why he brought a class action. He believes with through his counsel that there are other individuals who are similarly situated as he was, that was not given the opportunities to manage an NFL team, whether it's a head coach or a coordinator. And that's why he's bringing the class action. But this is the very first step. We'll have to see that even if procedurally the fact that it's been identified as a class action will actually survive. There are procedural hurdles that a party has to overcome in order for the class action to stay.
How does Brian Flores, or anybody in a discrimination case for that matter, in any industry, prove that they didn't get a job or were fired because of their race and not other reasons related to competence?
Well, there's very various types of evidence. There's direct evidence. I have a conversation that I was able to record because I'm in a one-party state and all you need is one party consenting to the recording. I've got that. That's direct evidence of discrimination where someone says you weren't hired because check the box. In this case, it's a race claim. So that's one. But there's the second part is circumstantial evidence, which is what they're trying to establish. What Flores is trying to establish through his counsel is look at the statistics. The statistics are terrible. And they start it at the very start of the complaint. They start by saying there's only one of the NFL 32 teams employs a black head coach. There's only four of the NFL 32 teams employs a black offensive coordinator. Only 11 of the NFL teams has a black defensive coordinator. So it goes on and on about these statistics, but statistics are not the end all and for all for any of this. You have to peel back the third part of the analysis is what the defense will start to establish is, wait, you have to look at all the individuals that we interviewed. Look at the fact that we have complied with the Rooney Rule.
Well, part of this lawsuit regarding the Rooney Rule is that Flores is claiming that he had a couple interviews where he was essentially brought in as a token to fulfill that minimal requirement with the New York Giants and the Denver Broncos. The Giants, there's this text message that's mentioned in the lawsuit. Do you want to explain that or do you want me to?
No, I mean, it's there for those who have a copy of the complaint. You can see the alleged screenshots of the text messages between Flores and Coach Bill Belichick. But we don't know in what context, how it was written, what was the conversation. There's so many things that puts that exchange into context that we don't know at this point. All we know is that these alleged screenshots of this text message are in the complaint.
And at least this one, what we've seen of it, and again, without context, is that Belichick texted Brian Flores and basically congratulated him for getting the Giants job before he had even interviewed. Turns out he texted the wrong Brian. The Giants ended up hiring a different Brian. And Flores is saying, well, look, this just proves that my interview was essentially a sham because they'd already hired their guy.
And we don't know at this point, Chris. I mean, Frank, all we know are the allegations that have been raised. And the fact that these screenshots exist allegedly in this complaint, but we'll have to, there's no doubt Bill Belichick will be brought in for a deposition. He will have to explain this exchange. He will have to explain what he knew. It's all about, we're talking about a coach, Bill Belichick's understanding of who was the incoming head coach. But unless he was the decision maker and he knew exactly what was taking place with the hiring of the head coach and the interviewing of Brian Flores, we don't really know.
Bill Belichick, of course, the coach of the New England Patriots, not involved in any way here. But Belichick obviously knows people with the Giants and maybe had some inside information. The Giants and the Broncos dispute these claims. They say that Brian Flores was a strongly considered candidate until the very end. And I suppose they can find ways to prove that.
And they can. What they'll end up doing is everybody involved in the interview of Brian Flores will have to have their statement under oath through a deposition, and they'll have to explain exactly how it took place, how Brian Flores ended up even being selected for the interview, who was involved in the interview process, who was involved in the decision-making process. I mean, there's so, this is just a web of information that needs to be picked up one strand at a time.
Another part of this initial salvo doesn't have anything to do with discrimination, but it could really have implications if it's proven true, this accusation that the Miami Dolphins owner, Flores, was the coach of the Dolphins for the last couple of seasons before being fired last month. He accuses Stephen Ross of, when he hired him in 2019, of offering him an extra $100,000 per loss to tank the season on purpose to get a better draft pick. You know, Ross maybe thought the team wasn't going anywhere anyway, so let's just be all out bad. So there are, you know, there are these competitive questions. Ross vehemently denies that. Are there criminal implications if Flores can prove it? Maybe lawsuits from fans or gamblers? And does Ross potentially have a case for defamation?
Oh, without question. I mean, if these, but let me just say, let me put this all in context. If all the accusations about this $100,000 alleged payoff exist only in this complaint, there is what's called a qualified privilege. So therefore, Steve Ross does not have a defamation case because the allegations of this payment only reside within the body of the complaint. But if there's evidence that some outside of the context of this complaint, that these accusations are being made against Steve Ross, then yes, he potentially has a defamation case against Flores.
Yeah, Flores also.
As it exists now, it only exists in the complaint, so this qualified privilege would attach, and then he could not. Okay. That's not to say he won't try. Certainly, it's a compelling argument to try to make a defamation case. It just may be met with a motion to dismiss for the qualified privilege I've just mentioned.
Now, the Rooney Rule, where you have to interview, you know, a couple of minority candidates for head coach and other leadership positions. Do you know of any other industry with a codified rule like that? And do they work?
They don't. There are. I'm not familiar if there are any codified rules per se. I know that there is a rule in California that requires boards to be diversified with females to be added to the board, but that's in California. I'm not very familiar with that law. I just know anecdotally that there is a law that exists about bringing in females into boards for California businesses. So there are other rules that exist and perhaps other mandates that exist around the country, but it really boils down to a genuine, authentic commitment to diversity inclusion of any company. And whether it is an NFL team or it's a Fortune 500 company, it really boils down to whether it's authentic and a true commitment. And we've seen that, especially as a defense attorney, that I represent a lot of companies around the country, they do have that genuine interest to bring diversity and inclusion to the forefront of their companies. And they have made significant strides to do so. And it's not that they were required to, but they just knew it was good business to do so. It gives you different thought processes. It gives you a different thought process in your board. It actually impacts the bottom line. Companies that do embrace diversity and inclusion have an increase to their bottom line. So there's a good business reasons to embrace diversity and inclusion. And without an overarching commitment, because there is some mandate or rule that exists.
Just finally, Brian Flores says he doesn't care about his own career anymore. He's doing this for the next generation. What if you were going to crystal ball it? Let's say everything he says turns out to be true or mostly true. What could happen here with the National Football League?
Well, I mean, if Mr. Flores is able to establish everything he said. Obviously, as I said, this is the first step. It is just the first step in a slew of many steps to come to see whether or not he can actually succeed at the end of the day. The changes could be implicated in terms of there could be consent decrees. I know that there's another case that's going to be filed. It's actually mentioned in the complaint. They're going to file a charge at the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. In that administrative charge, there can actually be a consent decree that will control the NFL and the processes for a period of time. So there might be an actual consent decree that controls the processes for the future. There may be, if there's a jury trial in this case, there may be punitive damages that are then lodged against the NFL. If the class action survives, and I said that there are a lot of hurdles that need to be that need to be overcome in order for the class to actually continue and exist as a class, instead of multiple cases of individuals who allegedly face the same discrimination that Mr. Flores claims to have endured. So there are many different scenarios that can happen, but we'll have to see where it goes, because I said there are a lot of moving parts and there are a lot of different avenues that can occur, but all of those can happen. Punitive damages, consent decrees, only, of course, if Mr. Flores is successful in bringing his claims to bear and establishing the evidence that needs to be done.
Mercedes Colwin, founding partner of the New York offices of Gordon and Reese, and of course, she's a Fox News legal analyst. Mercedes, thanks for coming on today.
My pleasure. Thanks, Chris.
Getting Schooled is a podcast hosted by Fox Nation's Abby Hornacek. Each week, Abby and her expert guests tackle topics we take for granted and help explain the roots and meanings behind them. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com. America is listening to Fox News. Subscribe to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com.
And now, some good news with Tanya J. Powers.
Getting too close to secure areas at the Pentagon is a no-no, but a recent intruder who crossed the line couldn't have known that. A loose hen was found one morning this week near the Department of Defense headquarters, and the Animal Welfare League of Arlington, Virginia, posted about the incident on social media. They weren't at liberty to say exactly where the hen, a Rhode Island red with brown feathers and a red comb, was found, but they could only say it was at a security checkpoint. It's also not clear just how the chicken got there in the first place. The bird was described as sweet and nervous and did allow some people to pet her. She's even been given a name, Henny Penny, the same moniker of the chicken that thinks the sky is falling in the folktale. Penny is doing okay now. She was adopted by an Animal League staff member who has a farm in Western Virginia. The group couldn't resist a little humor in their social media post, saying, quote, "Apparently the answer to why did the chicken cross the road is to get to the Pentagon." You knew that was coming, right? Tanya J. Powers, Fox News.
It's time for your Fox News commentary.
Dan Gaynor.
What's on your mind?
Jeff Zucker's time leading CNN included these five truly shocking moments. CNN President Jeff Zucker resigned on Wednesday for failing to disclose a consensual relationship with an employee. But what's truly amazing is that the long line of scandals and embarrassing moments during Zucker's tenure didn't force him out earlier. Nearly a decade with Zucker at the helm transformed CNN from a liberal news outlet to a blatant tool for leftist politics. Here are five truly memorable aspects of Zucker's time leading CNN. One of the most unethical aspects of Zucker's time as CNN's boss might also have been his undoing. Zucker allowed then-anchor Chris Cuomo to lead the network's effort to promote Chris's brother Andrew, then New York governor. The dynamic duo made headlines together as Chris yucked it up with Andrew, joking about COVID-19 testing as Americans died by the thousands. First, Andrew was implicated in numerous sexual harassment allegations, costing him his job. Then it was uncovered that Chris had been instrumental in his brother's defense effort, even gathering dirt on the accusers. CNN media reporter Brian Stelter raised the possibility that Chris Cuomo might have set the departure in motion. Two, 2020 Black Lives Matter Antifa riots did billions of dollars in damage. Roughly two dozen people killed, businesses looted and burned, and none of that was the enduring image of rioting. Instead, it was a simple bit of CNN propaganda that defined both the protests and the biased media coverage. The chyron, or words that appeared on screen, was written in all caps as fires burned behind the reporter. Quote, "Fiery but mostly peaceful protests after police shooting." In a year when journalists went out of their way to pretend riots never happened, that chyron became a rallying cry for CNN critics. Three, then White House correspondent Jim Acosta was the angry face of CNN throughout the Trump administration. He harangued, lectured, and got in fights with the president and his staff. In one memorable dust-up, Acosta refused to give up the microphone. Trump let him have it with both barrels. "Honestly, I think you should let me run the country. You run CNN, and if you did it well, your ratings would be much higher." Four, Zucker didn't hire Don Lemon as anchor, but he kept him around after a parade of gaffes and embarrassing moments. Even after Lemon suggested the Malaysian jet ironer might have been sucked up by a black hole. Lemon evolved to take race baiting to new lows.
last January said, if you voted for Trump, you voted for who the Klan supported. You voted for the person who Nazis support. You voted for the person who the alt-right supports. That's the crowd you were in. And that's Jeff Zucker's legacy. Number five, no list of CNN embarrassments would be complete without creepy porn lawyer Michael Avenatti. CNN gave Avenatti 122 appearances to push his rants against Trump. The PR blitz got so ridiculous that media maven Stelter predicted Avenatti was a potential 2024 Democrat presidential candidate. This has been Dan Gaynor with the Media Research Center.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. Stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com.
Download and subscribe to original podcast from Fox News Radio.
It's time to get caught up on what's happened and what's next. I'm Jared Halpern from Washington.
Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.
This is Jimmy Failla, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a 3-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at foxacrossamerica.com.